Thanks for listening to the Roto Grinders Daily Fantasy Fix Podcast. Sponsored by FanDuel.com. FanDuel.com, the leader in single-day fantasy sports contests.
Roto Grinders presents the Daily Fantasy Fix Podcast. Bringing you up-to-the-minute industry news, interviews from the biggest names in the industry, and game analysis to save you time and help you build your bankroll. Here's your host, the man with the best beard in daily fantasy, Crazy Gaby.
Hello there. Welcome. As the voice said, I am Crazy Gaby. And no, I haven't gone crazy, if my voice sounds a little strange to you guys. It's because I'm a little under the weather. And by under the weather, I mean my throat. I woke up this morning with my throat just about swollen shut. Everything else feels perfectly fine. Don't worry, I was a game time decision. I decided to gut it out, and here I am with Hoop. There it is, 24-10. He's going to help to class it up around here and bring the quality level of this broadcast up a little higher. So what's going on, my man?
Nothing. Yeah, try to keep it classy here, roll through this. Pretty odd slate of games here. We got one game that starts at 8 Eastern time, and then I think it's 5 that start at 10 Eastern time or later. FanDuel basically did away with the 8 o'clock game, and their main slate is that 10 p.m. start time. We were chatting about it prior to logging on here, and for us East Coasters, this is pretty cool. Pretty cool slate, especially when you have kids. Put the kids down to bed, can concentrate on these five games.
Yep, it's a preferable start time. I absolutely love it. The only thing that may not be preferable is that I don't think there's a big boy qualifier tonight at FanDuel. For those of you who are qualifier junkies, I think the Playboy one already filled.
Yep,
and the World Fantasy Baseball Championship, I don't believe there is a tournament tonight from what I saw. So you'll have to wait until tomorrow to get your qualifier game back on. But that's okay. Like Hoop was saying, if you got kids, if you got family, today's the perfect day to do your research and then just go take the family out for the night. You can get back home around 8:30, 9 o'clock Eastern, build your lineups once all the rosters are released. Frankly, this to me is perfect. I wish it was like this every single night. Especially because I can just, I don't like to sweat lineups anyways. I don't know about you. Yeah, I'm not a lineup.
I'm the same way.
Okay, good. Yeah, I don't like to sweat. I like to set it, and I just check it in the morning. How did I do? Okay, there we go. That's whatever the bottom line number is in the morning. I don't want to know what guy hit one 2 feet short of a home run. Yeah. I don't want to know what pitcher was getting squeezed. Like, that sort of stuff just tilts me too much, and I pay too much attention to it, so I like to just check in the morning when all I see is the bottom line and then, you know, go back over everything retroactively and see if I made any mistakes or see if there's any interesting tidbits of information.
Yep, we can agree on that, my friend. It's the preferable way to do it. Like you said, if you sit and watch every at-bat and every pitch, you are going to be on tilt for 4 to 5 hours.
Every night.
Every single night. You know, at first, I think a lot of people, when they first break into this industry, they're watching every pitch, they're watching every at bat. Not very good for the stress level.
Yep, especially if you have a family. Listen, if you are a young man who doesn't have a family, you're not tethered to that yet. I can understand, you know, ordering a pizza, kicking back and watching some games or whatever. Yeah. But even then, like, my advice to everyone would be: watch a game. Don't, like, you know, obsessively have the app up on your phone and be transitioning back and forth between every single at-bat and every single pitch. Just watch a couple of games. Enjoy the sport if you're doing that. But for people like you and I who have families, like, that's simply not an option to sit there and sweat games all night. So
no, sir.
And a little life hack, a pro tip here for everybody. Condensed games are your friend. You can get League Pass, you can get MLB at-bat, and you can watch condensed versions of games the next day. So you're worried you're going to miss out on something? That's fine. Was there a crazy pitching duel last night that you really want to, you know, check and see how this guy's throwing and how he looks on the mound? You want to look and see if the Atlanta Hawks are for real or whatever it might be? Just watch the condensed version the next day. It's like 20 to 30 minutes. You get the entire game, no commercials, no lollygagging, and you won't be on tilt because you already know the result. There you go.
I like it.
All right. Let's go ahead and, for one moment, talk a little bit about the contest here at FanDuel tonight. I said there weren't any qualifiers this evening, but that doesn't mean there are not contests for you to enter. In fact, if you go to FanDuel.com right now, you'll see that the normal slew of contests are there. They just lock at 10 o'clock tonight, and so you have a little bit of extra time to get those in. And I think one of the little extra benefits is if you create your own contests, you're going to get about an extra 3 hours for somebody who might be, of a skill level that's lower than yours. Let's be respectful still, even though we are always looking for players who are less skilled than us. That's the whole point of winning money. There is a good opportunity for you to get like an extra 3 hours of your game sitting in the lobby, whether you're creating a three-man or a five-man or putting a head-to-head out there. So just kind of a heads up, you get a little extra opportunity for someone to scoop up your games maybe.
Yes, indeed. The extra time can be valuable if you're trying to sell some head-to-heads. The more time they sit there, the more likely they are to get picked up.
Yep, and I'll give you guys one other little pro tip here. This is something that Dean actually turned me on to, our very own Dean 7890457892359 84. That's what his new name is, by the way. The 78904 is just shorthand. It's an abbreviation for his full name.
Yeah.
He told me that you can create a bunch of head-to-heads, and whatever the cutoff point is, like 20, 15 minutes before slate locks or whatever. Maybe create a bunch of them if you know you're going to be around when lineups lock. Let people buy your head-to-heads that are sitting out there, and if you're worried, like a lot of people are, that when lineups lock, if they haven't been matched yet, they get auto-matched, and you're going to get matched up against a lot of professional players and a lot of very good DFSers, and you're basically going to be trading rake. You can cancel those contests. So
yeah.
I understand maybe that sounds a bit counterintuitive because I am telling you guys to play at FanDuel.com, but at the same time, maybe this encourages you to put some contests into play whereas you wouldn't before. Maybe you were too afraid to create those 25 head-to-heads because you were worried you were going to get auto-matched against CSU Ram or Al Smizzle or Head Chopper or somebody like that. Well, you don't have to worry about that if you employ this strategy. Just keep an eye on them 15, 20 minutes or so before lineups lock. If they haven't been bought by other people randomly throughout the day, just go ahead and cancel them. It's the best of both worlds.
Yes, sir. It's a very, very good tip there.
So it's just the pro tip is, I believe, what that segment should be called. And with that, we will move on to today's album of the day. It's a band called Lydia, and the album is Illuminate. This is sort of like a post-rock emo. I'm not sure exactly how you'd classify it, but it's really good music. It's probably the kind of stuff you listen to when you were in high school if you're the same age as Hoop and I. Well, maybe not Hoop, since all he listened to was the radio, and I'm not sure if Lydia was on the radio. But Hoop, there is a crazy story behind not only this band, but how I discovered this band.
All right, let's hear it.
So there is a well-known, notorious DFS player whose name doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but the last three letters are the same as the last three letters in the band Lydia, the name Lydia. Does that ring a bell at all?
Lydia. No.
Condia.
Okay.
So there was an interview way back in the day. You can probably still find it if you diligently search the Roto Grinders forums with Condia asking him how he got his name. That was one of the questions. And it's about 3 years ago I came across this interview, and he said, "Well, I wasn't sure what to use as my screen name, so I decided to use my two favorite bands, Conditions and Lydia, and combine the two to create my screen name."
Interesting.
So that's how we get Condia, is two emo bands, Conditions and Lydia, combined together to create Condia.
Now, is this where you came across the band Lydia?
Yeah, this is how I came across the band Lydia. I thought to myself, like, if maybe this is his secret sauce, maybe this is the juice that gets his veins, pumped. So very, very kind of a cool backstory with this album. I recommend you check it out. It's very good music. Love the lead singer's vocal range. And they put together some very beautiful harmonies and instrumentation. It's a great album to check out. And as always, find me on Facebook at Crazy Gaby. And I would absolutely love to hear your musical suggestions today. Love listening to that. We'll move forward then to talk about the weather. And we really don't have much to talk about because everything is clear today. Outside of that Baltimore series, or that Baltimore game early, the doubleheader that's going to be leading off here very shortly, there's no real weather concerns, and of course that game isn't really offered on any site, so there's nothing doing with that one really, so don't have to worry about that. And with that, we'll move into a game-by-game breakdown, and we'll start it off with A.J. Burnett and Ian Kennedy. Pittsburgh taking on San Diego, and it looks like a 6.5 run total, minus 125 for Pittsburgh in this one. And I think A.J. Burnett has to be in consideration for the number one pitcher tonight. Maybe he doesn't win out over Corey Kluber, who we'll talk about later, but I do think he has to be in consideration.
Yeah, the decision's a lot tougher, than it looks. I mean, you look at a guy like Kluber and A.J. Burnett, and you're automatically going to go ahead and say, you know, I want Corey Kluber. You look at what Burnett's done this season, and he has to be in contention for the Cy Young at this point.
Yeah.
He's 4-1, carrying an ERA of 1.37. He's death to righties. The Padres are going to roll out a lineup that is very right-handed heavy, so this matchup is ideal for him. Nice pitcher's park here, Petco Field. Everything lines up here for him to have another dominant performance. He continues to put up good start after good start after good start, and the matchup and the game environment lead me to believe that he's going to go ahead and have another one of these dominant outings.
Yeah, and I think there's a couple really interesting nuggets with A.J. Burnett. The first of which is, hats tipped, as I always do every time I talk about A.J. Burnett, to Paul Sporer, who in his preseason pitching guide said that A.J. Burnett, kind of a head case, gets emotional, didn't like being in Citizens Park last year, playing for the Phillies, a team that was clearly, basically not concerned about winning. And, obviously it really affected him mentally, which is why he had such a bad season. And he said, he called it, he said when he gets back to Pittsburgh, not only is he going to be at a better place emotionally, he's going to have a better defense, and he's going to have the shift actually helping him out. Because the Pirates, of course, use a defensive shift, unlike in some Major League Baseball teams, which is still crazy to me that you wouldn't defend a shift. It's, it's proven that some players just hit it to the same side of the field every time.
Yeah.
But, it's really, I think it's possible and definitely even likely for him to continue out pitching his FIP and his ex-FIP. Now, I don't know that he's going to be a 1.37 ERA guy for the rest of the year, but I mean, the rest of his profile just extremely solid, a 23.1% strikeout rate, and the base on ball rate, 7.9%, a little high, but we'll take it, especially since he's had some major control issues in the past. 7.9% is reasonable, so I do think that tonight against the Padres, team against right-handed pitchers, they strike out 21.9% of the time, have only a 138 ISO. I think there's a lot to love in this spot.
Yeah, I like it a lot. I mean, my favorite parts is definitely the matchup here in the lineup that the Padres are going to roll out. I mean, large majority of the regulars are right-handed bats, and he's been dominant against right-handed bats this season. Like you said, the high strikeout rate. I mean, everything here is, in his favor tonight, so like him a lot.
The other interesting note for me on this game is how quickly the Pirates are rising versus right-handed pitching. They started off the season in almost an unbelievable funk, considering how good they were, one of the top teams in baseball against right-handed pitching last year. Well, they're on the rise. After being a bottom five team for a little while, they're actually 16th overall for the season, kind of a testament to how much they've heated up in the past couple of weeks. And right now, they stand a little below league average at 93 WRC+, but I have complete faith that they are going to continue to rise. I think that ranking is still a little deceptive. I would kind of peg them as a top 10 team against right-handed pitching. And I will be on a very short slate, in tournaments especially, I will be stacking against Ian Kennedy and his struggles this season.
Yeah, I think a lot of the recent success has to do with Andrew McCutchen finally coming around. He got off to a slow start this season, and he's been playing well lately, hitting lefties and righties fairly equally well. So I like him a lot. Like you said, these bats are going to be good tournament options. I don't think a lot of people will be on them because the hitting environment at Petco Park is one of the worst in baseball. But that being said, Ian Kennedy is very vulnerable to more so left-handed bats, but he can also give it up to righties as well. So, I like these guys probably more so for tournaments, like you said.
Yeah, Neil Walker, who we warned not to play against yesterday on the Grinders Live, not to play him against lefties, but the guy is phenomenal against right-handed pitching, from the left side of the plate. Lots of power from that side. Surprising power, actually. It's the reason he gets to bat in the cleanup spot. Andrew McCutchen, even a Pedro Alvarez, and Gregory Polanco, guys that you can definitely target tonight.
Absolutely.
Moving on over to Atlanta at San Francisco, we got Shelby Miller and Chris Heston. 6.5 run total, -133 for Chris Heston. And at first look, that may be a little bit of a head-scratcher. Two reasons. First of all, Shelby Miller's having a hell of a season. And yeah. I think a lot of people are going to be on him tonight, but I actually think Shelby Miller is the fade of the night because of how strong the Giants are against right-handed pitching. They've actually been the second-best team this year against right-handed pitching, 111 WRC+, plus, a decent 140 ISO, and they only strike out 17.8% of the time. You pair that up with Shelby Miller, who is far out-pitching his peripherals so far. He's got an 87% strand rate and a 206 BABIP to pair up with a 5.8% home run to fly ball ratio. I'm not saying he's going to be terrible. I even think he's going to be above average when all things are done. But he is not this good, and I think he pays the price tonight against a Giants team that is very good.
Yeah, I mean, it's very likely. On a site like our sponsor site, FanDuel, where the win is weighted so heavily, I don't really think you can play him there.
Yeah.
On a site where there's two starting pitchers, where the win's not as heavy, I think he is in play a little bit. But I actually like the guy on the other side of the ball here a little bit more than him, Heston. Yeah. The price is a lot cheaper. Don't get me wrong, the Braves do not strike out a ton. You know, they traded away basically all their strikeout guys, and they're putting the ball in play a lot. But his price is so cheap in so many spots. If he picks up, you know, specifically on FanDuel, if he picks up the win, strikes out even, you know, three batters over six innings and gets you 12 fantasy points, you'll take that. So I don't mind him tonight. I think it's a good spot here for him to pick up the win. And like you said, Shelby Miller, he's going to regress at some point. The numbers certainly indicate that. He is carrying a 1.5 ERA right now. At the end of the season, there's no way that will stand true. So I think I like Heston a little bit. Real cheap on DraftKings, real cheap on FanDuel. So he's an interesting play to me tonight.
Yeah, and to kind of add on to what you're saying, he has a heavy ground ball lean. Of course, you know, playing at AT&T means that he's probably not going to give up a home run. You also pair that up with the Braves, who just don't have a whole lot of power. You know, this is a team that decided early on, you know, we're going to be a contact team that doesn't strike out a lot. And that's who they are. I just think that all signs point to like it being a. I would take the if someone you know gave me even money on a home run given up by a San Francisco pitcher in this game, I would take the under on .5. So
yeah, here's my advanced analysis for today. Heston's ERA is a full 3 runs lower at home opposed to on the road.
Oh snap!
Yep.
Oh, snap. There we go.
Yep. Digging deep here.
Advanced analysis. I like it. I'm a big fan of that. Yeah, and I look at his profile, and like it checks out, too. You know, there's nothing sticking out. In fact, his FIP and XFIP look like he could be a little better even than what his ERA suggests. But, you know, just a very workman-like guy, very workhorseman-like guy, and you're fine with that. So as far as San Francisco bats, I think the guys I would try and target would be Brandon Belt mainly. And I'm not sure who will hit at the top of the order tonight. They mix it up a little bit. But whoever's at the top of the order, any left-handed bats, I think I'd be fine with. I think Brandon Crawford, too. There's a great article on FanGraphs recently detailing his recent power surge and how it might actually be sustainable. I think he's a decent option at shortstop tonight, too.
Yeah, that's fine. And even a guy like Blanco, he's let off a few times against righties. If he happens to work his way up there, he would be an interesting play, dirt cheap basically everywhere.
CC Sabathia taking on Kendall Graveman as the Yankees head into Oakland, or I guess continue their stay in Oakland. They're already there, by the way. Just want to make sure nobody thought they got on a plane, left, and then came back to Oakland last night after playing there yesterday. But I digress. 8-run total, -110 for the Yankees. So essentially a pick'em between these two guys. And I think, can all the people who keep talking about CC Sabathia, like, you know, he's a sleeper pick, can we stop that yet?
I never started, so okay. You don't have to worry about me. But anyone else, yeah, definitely stop talking like that. His stuff's on the decline. The velocity's down. His secondary pitches just not doing what they once did. Don't use this guy, please.
Yeah, and if you wanted to try to play devil's advocate, and I'll do that for all of you guys out there who are still CC Sabathia apologists, You take a look at the Oakland Athletics against left-handed pitching. Well, they're a top-five team against righties. They're actually bottom-five against left-handed pitching. They have a 73 WRC+, but there are two very strange statistics that stand out to me. First of all, a .76 ISO against left-handed pitching. .76. Just wow. Non-existent power.
Yeah, that's really bad.
But a 16.5% strikeout rate and a 10.6% walk rate basically tells me these guys are not trying to swing for power at all. They're just choking up on the bat and trying to make contact every single time. And the problem with that is I don't think CC Sabathia has the velocity to make them pay for something like that. I think it's just going to be a lot of hit-to-contact stuff. Mm-hmm. The Yankees don't have a great defense. And I'm not saying CC Sabathia is going to get rocked tonight. Like, I'm not stacking Athletics against him. But I also don't think he's going to be twirling a gym either. I'm not a big fan.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those games where you could see him giving up quite a few runs and not necessarily give up a home run, you know, a couple singles, a gapper here and there, you know, a double down the line, something like that. The A's just don't have the right-handed power bats. I mean, against a lefty, they're going to have Billy Butler hitting fourth. He doesn't have the power upside.
Yep.
So, I mean, I'd definitely take a look at a couple of these A's hitters. Even Butler, I mean, he's on a site like FanDuel where a walk and single are rewarded and, you know, it's not a huge emphasis on power. I think he's an interesting play, 2.6K.
Yep.
Marcus Semien, he'll hit at the top of the order. His price has come down a little bit after a recent hot streak. So any of these right-handed guys at the top of the order, I think, are fine options if you want to go ahead and pick on CC Sabathia, which I recommend doing.
And also, CC Sabathia's home run trouble is not going away. He's had an elevated home run to fly ball rate for quite some time now. He's at 14% this year. I tend to believe that this is just an actual skill decline as opposed to unluckiness because it's persisting through multiple seasons. And one other player, like, how do you pronounce his name? Mark Kana? Kana? Kana?
Oh, Kana, I think, yeah.
So I kind of like him as well. He usually hits in a decent spot. He's one of the few guys that does have some power against left-handed pitching.
Yep, definitely. So,
all right, on the other side, against Kendall Graveman, somebody who's just a ho-hum, middle-of-the-rotation type guy, actually probably more of a back-end-of-the-rotation type guy, not a lot of strikeout upside. In fact, he has a 6.4% swinging strike rate, you know, 3 percentage points below league average, which is huge. He also has a 10.3% base on ball rate, and he's giving up 14.3% home run to fly ball ratio this year. Now, it's only in 22.1 innings, but I say all those things to paint the picture of a guy who's just not very good and doesn't have the strikeout stuff, in my opinion, to get much better. So I think picking on him with some Yankees bats who have a very high isolated power against right-handed pitching, 176 team total, I think that's a very good opportunity tonight to stack up on some guys like Brian McCann, Alex Rodriguez, who actually has phenomenal numbers over the past 2.5 seasons against right-handed pitching.
Yeah, I mean, any of these guys at the top of the order, I mean, even you look at a guy like Headley, who's been hitting towards the top against right-handed pitching. With Ellsbury out, you look at him, Gardner, McCann, like you said, A-Rod, whose numbers are, you know, been fabulous this season. Anyone at the top of the order here? I mean, Graveman is not a pitcher to be afraid of. I mean, anyone here at the top of the order certainly in play. You know, it's a 5-game slate, so there's not too many more options. And this is, you know, this happens to be one of the more appealing ones.
Absolutely. Let's move it on over to the Detroit Tigers taking on the Los Angeles Angels. Buck Farmer against C.J. Wilson, and I actually don't have a total on this game. Do you have a total?
I think I saw like 7.5. No, it's 8. Eight.
Okay. Vegas Insider page is messed up. That's 2 X's where the total should be. So
yeah, it's sitting at 8, and Angels are slight favorites at -123.
-123. C.J. Wilson, of course, fly ball-oriented pitcher. Really bad against righties, really good against lefties, and unfortunately that does not bode well against a right-handed heavy Tigers lineup who is hitting with a 135 ISO, just a 19.2% strikeout rate, and also has the fifth best WRC plus at 107 against lefties so far this season. I gave you the numbers of the Tigers against righties, and sorry about that. The Tigers have a 166 ISO, a 121 WRC plus, and a 346 team wOBA against lefties this year. Just second best team in MLB against them, and I think that probably the de facto kind of just standard stack for the night.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a pitcher that struggles against right-handed hitters, this is one of the worst matchups for you. So, you know, from that, we can come up with the fact that C.J. Wilson's in a pretty bad spot tonight because the Tigers are going to load up with righties. From the top of the lineup, Rajay Davis will lead off. He's a very good hitter against left-handed pitching, kind of underrated. You know, he had one of the better WOBAs in all of baseball last year against left-handed pitching. So he'll lead off. You got guys like Kinsler, Cabrera, V-Mart's out. So J.D. Martinez hits cleanup, Cespedes. So, I mean, any of those guys, I mean, any right-handed hitter is in a phenomenal spot here against C.J. Wilson. Like you said, he struggles against righties, fly ball oriented. And basically all those guys, except Rajay Davis, have some substantial power. So good spot here for the Tiger bats.
Yep, big fan of all of them. And on the other side of this, Buck Farmer. In case you're wondering who he is, I know I was. Keeps the ball down in the zone, 91 to 94 mile per hour fastball. And from what I saw, he has a slider and a changeup that could end up, you know, making him maybe a three-man in the rotation. But he's more likely a 4-5 back-end guy if he can't improve either of those pitches. So nothing special here with young Buck Farmer. But the Los Angeles Angels have proven, you know, at the beginning of the season, we called it an anomaly. I think at this point, we can call it a trend. The Angels are very bad against right-handed pitching. Outside of Mike Trout and Cole Calhoun, they really just don't have anything.
Yeah, it's they're struggling, and they have some bats at the top of the lineup that are obviously very appealing, guys we want to target. Calhoun had a great season last year. Trout's obviously one of the best hitters in baseball. You know, Albert Pujols is kind of on the decline. And Ibar leading off, I think he's in a solid spot. Price is still cheap. You know, bumped up to that leadoff spot. He can steal you some bases as well. So I think, you know, on the short slate, you're going to have to take a look at some of these guys. I'd probably focus on the lefties, maybe Ibar or Calhoun.
Yeah. I think that's who I would take here in, like, cash games and whatnot. But I do think Buck Farmer is a great tournament option.
Yeah, I mean, you can't deny the struggles here. And they've made some pretty bad / decent right-handed pitchers look like Cy Young candidates this year. So it's definitely worth a shot in tournaments.
And we arrive at the last game of the night. Cleveland at Seattle. Corey Kluber taking on James Paxton. Minus 117 for the Indians here, and a 7-run total. Corey Kluber, your de facto ace on the night. Again, we said earlier, A.J. Burnett could challenge him, especially if that price break lets you get the bats you want. But right now, Kluber is just locked in. And the Mariners strike out 22% of the time against right-handed pitching. So outside of those three big bats, Kyle Seager, Nelson Cruz, and the ghost of Robinson Cano, there's not a whole lot cooking in this lineup.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, it's an elite pitching environment here at Safeco. You know, the Mariners love to strike out against right-handed pitching. I mean, they'll load up some lefties here, but it's not guys you're going to be afraid of. I mean, they'll have, you know, Brad Miller will be hitting towards the top of the lineup. I'm sure Seth Smith will be up there. Robinson Cano, Seager, Logan Morrison. None of those guys scare me one bit. Like you said, Cano would be the one left-handed bat that you might be a little bit afraid of. He's not the hitter he was 2 or 3 years ago with the Yankees. Price is down to, what is it on FanDuel, like 2.6K? Basically just giving him away right now. Kluber's definitely an excellent option tonight. Him and Burnett, I think, 1 and 2, no doubt about it.
And on the other side there, James Paxton was a little interesting when I looked into his profile here, because he's actually been getting, it looks like, a little bit lucky this season. He's got a 3.52 ERA, which is slightly above league average, but he also has a 2.52 BABIP, a 14.2% line drive rate, and just a 6.5% swing strike rate. All those stats, lucky, combined to form a very lucky picture of James Paxton that he hasn't been getting rocked a little harder. The FIP and the ex-FIP agree. I actually think that James Paxton is a great target tonight, too, against an Indians team that is deceptively strong against left-handed pitching. We think of them as a team that crushes righties. They're actually the 10th best team in baseball against left-handed pitching, only a 16.4% strikeout rate, and they have a 109 WRC plus against them. So you guys like Carlos Santana, Ryan Rayburn, I'm drawing a blank here. Yan Gomes is back.
He's Avilas, Mike Avilas.
Yep.
So. Yeah, all those guys. Yeah, it's really surprising. We've talked about it a couple times on here, the fact that the Indians are able to get it done against left-handed pitching. A lot of their regulars at the top of the order happen to be left-handed. But they have those few pieces that they're able to stick in their lineup that hit left-handed pitching really well. You know, Rayburn will likely hit cleanup. Obviously, Carlos Santana will hit towards the top. He's very good against left-handed pitching. Avilas, he'll get in there. I think they've been hitting him fifth or sixth, I believe, against left-handed pitching, but he's really good against lefties. So that they work in enough pieces, enough right-handed bats that are really good against left-handed pitching to get the job done. And like you said, that ranking 10th against left-handed pitching, very surprising, but, you know, it's something you really can't overlook. I mean, they just managed to get it done against left-handed pitching. So, you know, Paxton, maybe for tournaments, you know, the pitching environment here is very solid, Safeco. But outside of that, I really wouldn't target him in cash games against a guy like Corey Kluber.
And on that note, it is time for us to bow out. Thank you all for listening to today's podcast for the short Thursday night slate. Please remember to play in some of those aforementioned FanDuel contests, 10:05 lock time, just so you don't get it twisted. Got some time to spend with your family and do whatever before you have to come back home into your office or whatever and make lineups. Today's question of the day for all of you to answer on Twitter is, what would be the perfect lock time for you? If lineups could lock at exactly the perfect time for you every single day, what would it be for you? Mine, I think, would be, I'm going to say like 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, because then I can do, you know, my Grinders Live show. I could do Grinders Live at like, you know, 11:30 a.m., be done at noon, like 12:30, and the slate would lock at like 2. And then I'd have the rest of the day to do whatever with family and get stuff done. That would be the perfect lock time for me. I'd love to hear what the perfect lock time would be for all of you. You can get on Twitter and tell Hoop and I about that, at CrazyGaby. He is at Hoop2410. And as always, please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. It helps us to gain some steam in the Google machine, which is always a good thing if you're trying to spread the word about the daily fantasy industry, as we all should. Upcoming live shows for today, the 4:30 Eastern Happy Hour with myself and Boggs. At 5:30, there will be Grinders Live with Dean and Al Smizzle. And then at 6 o'clock Eastern, Dan and Beer Makers Fan are going to be rocking SiriusXM Fantasy. You can find that on Channel 87. Thanks again for listening, and we will see you all later. Peace.
Thanks for listening to the Daily Fantasy Fix Podcast. Head to rotogrinders.com and check out all of our daily fantasy content. Remember to follow us on Twitter at Rotogrinders for breaking news and expert analysis.